Four's Company Saturday mornings with myself, Nick Frazier, Jake Wallman behind the glass, and we are pleased to welcome our very, very special friend, a good friend of mine, a good friend of Nick Frazier's, one of my favorite people to work with, and I hope he's listening and I hope he's blushing. Parker Kelly is with us. Nick Frazier, first of all, welcome back. Welcome to the other side of the hour. I'm glad you stuck with us this time.
Hello?
Hello?
You got me?
Yeah,
hello.
Have you?
How are you?
Yes. Yeah, I'm happy you're with us. And I'm also happy to welcome Parker Kelly in with us. I'm very excited to talk to him for the next hour. I got a lot to hit with you, Parker.
Oh, I know. We have a lot of ground to cover. And yes, I was listening and I was blushing. So I appreciate the kind words.
Well, you are my pookie bear and I hope you know that. Real quick before we get into a big topic that Frazier and I have been wanting to talk about with you. Parker, who is the most famous sports figure you've ever met for our question of the day?
This one is pretty easy for me. It doesn't take long to think about. It would be Peyton Manning. I went to his football camp in Thibodaux, Louisiana, and I will give $5 to whoever can spell Thibodaux without having to look it up. But I went to his camp when I was a sophomore and junior in high school. So I got to meet him twice.
Oh, I can imagine you just picked his brain.
I did. It was a fantastic experience. Got to meet the whole Manning family, Cooper, Eli, Archie. So it was a blast.
Oh, the entire Manning family, you should have just let off with that. I mean, Peyton's the big one, but the whole Manning family is, that takes it to another level.
Yeah, I suppose that gives me some extra brownie points on this. But
yes,
yeah.
You do. Almost enough brownie points for extra recess. All right, let's hit the big topic that we have alluded so far on this show. The NCAA has reached a settlement to allow universities to directly pay its players, whether that be football, basketball, baseball. Division I athletics, universities are now allowed to pay their athletes directly, in addition to NIL. What do we make of this, gentlemen? Is this a good thing for college sports? Specifically college football. Is this a good thing? Are there things that need to be put in place to regulate this? What do we make?
I mean, it's a loaded question, Connor, because it's not just college football. From what I'm reading in this article, it states that there's $20.5 million per school. So if that's per school, that means all the student athletes. So I used Alabama as an example for this. Online, it said they had 600 student athletes, that is. So if you were to divide that up of $20.5 million, that equals out to almost $34,000, a little over $34,000.
Yeah.
So you're giving every student athlete there basically an entry-level job salary. But my question is, if you're a Power Four conference team in college football, that is, and you still have your NIL collective outside of college football, what if you were to use Preferred Walk-Ons as a scapegoat to this whole entire situation? Obviously, Preferred Walk-On, you're a student athlete, I get it, but you're not a scholarship athlete. So does this financial compensation only apply to, I guess, student athletes that are on scholarship? Or does it apply to certain rosters, structure situations? Like, that's my biggest question. Because if it's not, then you can manipulate this whole salary cap situation, because that's what it is. It's essentially a salary cap per school, $20.5 million.
Yes. And
that's exactly what it is. No, it's a $20.5 million salary cap that is going to be divvied up among rosters. Sorry, Connor, I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, you're good.
But as far as the scholarships, I think this is going to be interesting because basically they're allowing, if we're talking about football specifically, 105 allotted scholarships, to whereas before you could have a roster of, let's say, 120. So basically what they're hoping to do is kind of grandfather in these walk-ons, meaning that eventually we're going to get rid of these walk-ons where schools will not be accepting walk-on football players anymore. But the walk-ons that are currently on the roster, eventually they're going to be weeded out. So make of that what you will. I certainly think that is interesting. But when I saw the news yesterday, this is, to me, as big of a deal as when NIL was introduced in July 1st of 2021, I believe, because we're one step closer to these athletes becoming employees, which is basically what they are right now without having the term employee.
It is. Yeah, but also too, Parker, about that, say if I'm going to use Alabama again as this example. Say Alabama doesn't fill all their roster spots with scholarship players, so they don't have to guarantee that a lot of the amount of money that's getting paid directly to Alabama student athletes. And so those preferred walk-ons, I'm going to use them as an example, were to basically get paid through an NIL collective outside the university. That doesn't go against the cap. So essentially you're able to manipulate the roster structure of this, but yet you still have the certain amount of bodies to help with, you know, practices. I count those people as like practice squad players for college sports, if that makes sense, because you're not really necessarily getting rid of, I guess, preferred walk-ons per se, because they're looked at as almost like practice squad. Cause like in all reality, we all know this is professional sports now. Like we're getting to the point where it's salary cap, players on the roster, they're getting paid. And then you got to have some form of a practice squad. And I think that's the best way to do it, where you go through an NIL collective to pay preferred walk-ons to be your practice squad guys. And if they end up making the roster, then they get their NIL money along with maybe a small compensation from the university. Now, that's saying, too, if each student athlete gets paid equally, nonetheless, maybe not, like that's where it starts to come into effect of, then you got to involve contracts, because then you got to see, oh, well, who is Johnny Joe getting for 3 years? Like, who, is he going to be guaranteed this amount of money? And say he transfers. Say Johnny Joe transfers to Texas. Is he going to keep the money that Alabama paid him last season, and then Texas renegotiates a new contract? That's when all this gets real murky. It's very, very quick.
It's worth noting that rosters have been tinkered with. Football can now have 105 players on their roster, maximum full scholarships if they want, instead of 85 and as many walk-ons as they want. College basketball can now have a maximum of 15. It used to be 13 with unlimited walk-ons. And baseball can now only have 34 players as opposed to the 40. But all of them can be scholarship as opposed to only 11.7 of them being scholarships, if that makes sense. So I'm with Frazier. I think we are trending towards the direction of we're going to get into contracts. We're going to get into, okay, we're going to sign this freshman out of high school. We're going to sign him to Alabama for a 3-year deal. That way we can put a little monetization on the transfer portal. You can't opt out of your deal unless you have an opt-out option within your contract. I think we're trending towards that direction, and I think we should be trending towards that direction if we're going to go this way of universities outright paying college athletes.
And if I can, and you guys add are to, go ahead. Go ahead. Sorry,
you guys are alluding to the inevitable. I mean, at some point that is going to happen. I actually was talking with Jared Stillman about this, I believe, on Thursday. The idea that, you know, coaches have these contracts, and if they want to go to another school, or even if they get fired, like with Jimbo Fisher at Texas A&M, when he got fired, he still had a lot of money and a lot of years left on that contract that Texas A&M had to pay him. So there's certain guidelines in that contract. Now we implement this with the players, where I'll give an example of Madden Iamaliava, Nico's brother. You know, he was with Arkansas, never played a snap of football for the Razorbacks, but he decided to leave and follow Nico to UCLA. Well, what happens with that money that he was promised and that he signed up for when he committed to Arkansas? Does Arkansas still have to pay him that money, or does he go to UCLA? That's why I'm in total agreement. We need collective bargaining agreements. We need player contracts so that this type of stuff doesn't happen, and it's not as murky and nebulous.
Yeah, and I agree with you. And that's what I was saying earlier, is like, where does that money go? And right now, that money stays with Nico's little brother, if that were to be the case. That money would stay with the student athlete, unfortunately so, when it comes to colleges looking at their funds for the year. But my thing that really bugs me is, if you are, again, I'll use Alabama, if you're a recruit that is being recruited by Alabama and you're in high school, and there is already NIL that's getting into high school football and so forth with the payments and all that, say you're a collective that's with Alabama, or you're a third-party collective that is somewhat associated with Alabama, and you're helping recruit players through NIL, which is what's happening. Nobody's saying it, but that's what's happening. You're then helping Alabama get that recruit, so then they're already getting paid before they even step on campus, and that's not even including their roster spot of financial compensation. So that's what bothers me a little bit, is you're using the NIL thing as a – I mean, it's been happening the last couple of years now, but, like, you're using the NIL funds as a recruiting tactic, which I think just dilutes the whole situation of, man, where do you really want to go play? Like, that's what bothers me, because everybody loves the purity of college football, the amateur athlete that ends up making a huge name for himself. You can't do that anymore because they're going after the money. And, like – I think Joe Dubin said it earlier this week, talking about Drew Bennett. You know, he was a average player for the most part in college, and then comes to the Titans, and look what happens. He's probably one of the best wide receivers this franchise has seen, minus Derek Mason. So, like, that's what you're missing out of college football now, is those one-off scenarios of, oh, Joe Schmo could have been really good, but, yeah, the money kind of got involved with all this. And that's the unfortunate ending to the NIL and this money aspect of college sports.
You're sort of seeing it now, too, where you have guys like Jalen Daniels, for example, over at Kansas. When he decided he was coming back to Kansas, he didn't say he was coming back. It was reported that he and Kansas had reached an agreement. You're going to start seeing more of that if we implement contracts, because they're going to get signed to, quote, contract extensions. We'll sign you to a 3-year deal. If you don't think you're good enough to go to the NFL, hey, we'll sign you to another 1-year deal, and you can come back. And then you can get whatever NIL money that you do business with, whoever you want to sponsor you with. The thing I wonder about is, when do guaranteed contracts come into play? When do we see, you know, a 5-star blue chip talent committed to Georgia saying, I want $40 million a year guaranteed?
Ooh,
I think that's the next step. I honestly think that's the next step, because now we've reached this house agreement, and granted, there's still a lot of ground that needs to be covered. You know, obviously we got to figure out the transfer portal. Obviously that, you know, they're still trying to figure out the playoff and what that will look like in 2026 and beyond. Mm-hmm. But as far as this house settlement, I'm pretty optimistic, because at least somebody is trying to do something in order to fix the sport as it's currently constructed right now. Now, as far as I'm sure that you all saw the news that if a player has an NIL deal worth over $600, there's going to be a separate clearinghouse. I believe the name of NIL Go, that they're going to determine if it is fair market value. So I'm curious about, well, how are you going to tell an athlete that he's worth this, you know, without having him seen the field at all? You know, if he's a true freshman coming onto campus, you've never seen him play college football before. Yep. So how do you determine what's fair market value for player X? So I still think there's a lot left to be determined, but I certainly think that's the next step.
Yeah, and to Parker, to that, I think what this article has also mentioned, that this is for the next decade, when they talk about, you know, this college cap, salary cap per university. It's going to increase on a yearly basis for the next decade. So that shows that they have a form of stability. And in the meantime, they're going to try to figure out, how do we include a CBA into all this? Kind of like the college football playoff. Everybody's trying to say, oh, yeah, I'm done with the 4-team. I'm done with the 8-team, 12-team, whatever. And they need to have some form of consistency. With this aspect, yeah, it's not the end-all, be-all answer, but yet they're still giving a direction, saying, oh, for the next decade, we're going to increase the school's salary cap on a yearly basis. And I think that's smart, because in the meantime, they'll be able to figure things out behind closed doors.
I agree. We'll come back. We'll talk more about this. Nick Frazier, are you sticking around one more segment, or are you done?
I am going to bounce, gentlemen. Please take care of hold down the fort. Let's put it that way.
Well, real quick before you go, Joey from Bellevue on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, asked, Nick, what's the name of your soccer podcast?
It is called Talking Calcio. You can hear it on the Game Nashville Sports Network, 102.5 The Game's podcasting platform. Yeah, Talking Culture, there'll be a new episode out next week just because Nashville SC is on a international duty right now. They have 4 or 5 players that are playing for different countries. Yazbek playing for Team Australia. I believe Walker Zimmerman got called up. This was a late call-up for them.
Buzzcut
for the U.S. men's national team. And, yeah, that's primarily it. So, yeah, you can listen to the Talking Culture podcast on the Game Nashville Sports Network anywhere you get your podcast. So, yeah, thanks, guys. Have a good one.
Nick Frazier, always a pleasure. We will see you next week for a bonus hour from now on. Again, as we reported earlier in the show, Forrest Company going to 3 hours from now on. We'll come back, myself and Parker Kelly. We'll talk more about this new ruling from the NCAA House settlement on allowing universities to pay college players outright. That's next. Forrest Company, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Forrest Company back here with you, brought to you by LPL Financial Nashville and Patrick Conger. Wealth management advice for you, no matter your current situation or stage in life. We are broadcasting live from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly BI membership, where the buzz is always about great service. Connor Newt here at the studio, Parker Kelly joining me. We are talking about the NCAA House settlement that was reached yesterday, which allows universities to outright pay college athletes directly. And Parker, I don't know about you, but my initial reaction is the same one I have right now, that this is good for the sport. This is finally governing rules towards the transfer portal, towards the wild, wild west of college football, especially we have right now. I think this is the first step in putting some guidelines in this rules in this sport. Granted, we are headed towards more of, you know, an NFL framework of college football, but I think that's the only way from now on. I think that by putting these guidelines and opening, well, first off, you open the door towards the transfer portal with no guidelines. That was the first step. This is kind of setting it back. I think we are kind of reaching a point where there are rules now. And I think that by this settlement, we are trending in the right direction.
Right. And I was texting with some people last night. And while we don't know a lot, since this House settlement was literally introduced last night, it was finally approved, it is a step in the right direction because now we're not dealing with hypotheticals anymore. We have some concrete, okay, like, you get an NIL deal worth over $600. We got to run it through a clearinghouse to determine fair market value. Also, something that I think is interesting is there is going to be a separate third party as well that is going to enforce if you break the rules regarding NIL, you kind of try to pivot that cap as much as you can. There's going to be a stiff punishment. It's not just going to be a slap on the wrist. We don't know what those punishments are going to be quite yet, but there is going to be a punishment, and that'll help as far as, you know, in today's world of college football, if you don't like something, well, it goes straight to the court. And we can't advance as a sport if every 30 seconds we're bringing something else to court, we're suing the NCAA for this, we're suing them for that. So this is certainly a step in the right direction.
Sure. And this comes from ESPN's Dan Murphy via his article. That new enforcement organization is called the College Sports Commission. And they hired MLB executive Brian Seeley as its CEO. Seeley's job is described as having to build out the organization's investigative and enforcement teams and oversee all of its ongoing operations and stakeholder relations. So basically, this third party is a governing body that regulates the rules, which is what college sports needed. It needed someone to regulate the rules. Obviously, Charlie Baker is not going to do that. So they create this third party that is going to oversee that all rules are followed. Kind of like I don't want to say players association because it's not players, but it is a governing body that is looking out for the rules and looking out for the progression of college sports.
Right. No, 100%. And to all the people, I obviously, like, as college football fans, you and I, we obviously don't like, you know, everything that has gone on in the past couple of years with the wild, wild west, as you called it. But think about it. College football, I'll use the famous Rome analogy, right? Rome was not built in the day.
Yep.
It's the same thing with college football. College football was not built overnight. And I certainly think it's resilient. And I'll throw out a hypothetical. Last year's Georgia-Alabama game, one of the best games of the entire college football season. And towards the end of the game, you know, and you're locked into the TV. You're not thinking about, I wonder how much Georgia's left tackle is making in terms of NIL. I'm not thinking about, oh, he transferred from this school. I'm just locked into the game.
Right.
So as long as we can still maintain that feeling, right, college football is not ruined. Now, there's plenty of imperfections behind the scenes that, you know, we're working to get fixed. Some of it may be slower than others. This is a step in the right direction. So I just wanted to clarify, college football, far be it, is not ruined.
Right. You still have the pageantries and the traditions and, you know, the overall culture of college football. To me, this is, like you said, a step in the right direction because we are governing these rules. We opened the door. We opened a Doctor Strange portal that unleashed all the problems of the multiverse. This house settlement rule is the way of sort of closing that. We're sort of correcting the wrongs. I don't want to say correcting the wrongs. We're growing on them. We're saying, okay, we encourage the transfer portal. We encourage NIL. We encourage this new era of college sports, but we're also going to put rules on it. We're also going to make it so, you know, you can make money the right way. Not that we're saying we're supporting it. Universities are paying these athletes because they support this settlement. And I think that's kind of the way of growing college sports. I think that's just the way we're trending. We're going to get to a point where, you know, players are going to have contracts. We're going to see Alabama sign a blue chip wide receiver to a 3-year, $28 million deal. That's just how it's going to go. It's going to become a mini NFL in its own right. Is that a bad thing? To some, maybe. But it's also a change with the times. It's also a way that we look at it and we say, you know, this is the new era. This is just how things are.
Yeah, and the piece that I read yesterday used the term modernizing college football. And somebody that a lot of people listen to on this front, a lot of people respect, the great Nick Saban, he's even said, you know, we don't have a problem with the players getting paid money.
Yeah.
Because I think we can all agree, you know, that the players should have been they should have been allowed to make a little bit money. I mean, this is going back to the Johnny Manziel days. Heck, even going all the way back to Reggie Bush. And players should be allowed to transfer, or else we wouldn't get the stories like Joe Burrow. We wouldn't get the Baker Mayfields. Even, you know, locally, we wouldn't get the stories of Hendon Hooker. But I think a lot of this, you use the Doctor Strange, you know, opening the portal, a lot of this was unwarranted.
Right.
Now, you can implement the transfer portal. You can implement NIL. But there should have been some rules and guidelines surrounding that because they're not a bad thing. The bad part about it was you can do whatever you want, but then sometimes the NCAA would come in and be like, well, you can't do that. Well, the school's response is, well, there was no rule outlining that, so how do we know what to do? That was the issue. And if you would have asked me 5 years, 10 years ago, Parker, do you want government intervention in college football? I would have laughed at you. But this was the only way forward for anything to get done.
I mean, if you ask me, I think this settlement was about 20 years too late. I think we've reached the point where, yes, we need a governing body that allows college players to be paid and allows to regulate the portal. That saying, to go back on your point, we need those rules because I think you had players taking advantage of it. I think you had people that thought, you know, I'm going to play for this school this year, and then I'm going to transfer and play for that school next year, and then it is a 4-year process. I think by implementing this and eventually multi-year contracts, you're going to get rid of that. You're going to have, you know, contract buyouts for people that want to hit the portal. But they would have to meet certain regulations, if that makes sense. Like, I'll just throw a random player out there. Let's say Ryan Williams wants to enter the portal and head to LSU. Alabama would have to pay his contract buyout for that to happen. Does Alabama have to? No. But that would be, you would have negotiations. It's going to be similar to the NFL. I'll just That's my conclusion. It's going to be like the NFL. Is that a good thing or a bad thing? I'm not sure yet. But my final verdict on this settlement is I think this is a step in the right direction for the rules of college sports.
100%. I think nationally, everybody was just waiting for this moment to be announced because, you know, they'd have a meeting here and a meeting there discussing, you know, if this house settlement was going to be approved. It should have been approved a long time ago. It should have been approved back in, you know, all the way back in April.
Right.
But I think that what I personally would like to see is I really love the stories of, okay, this high profile school recruits a high rated blue chip recruit and he develops and, you know, he stays for his sophomore year, stays for his junior year, continues to get a little bit better, stays for his senior year. And all of a sudden he's a star in the sport. He goes to the NFL, makes life changing money. That's the type of stuff that Nick Saban and others have been talking about. And I'll use the Nico situation as an example. Nico and his camp, they made a decision that was very, very short-sighted. And you don't think that whenever the time is that Nico wants to enter the draft, you don't think an NFL team is going to come back and look at this situation? I mean, you're fooling yourself if you think otherwise.
Right.
So I think it was a very short-sighted decision by Nico that ultimately him ending up in a worse offense statistically if we're comparing the last year to what Tennessee did. And he's also making less money than what he would have made if he stayed at Tennessee. So it's really encouraging these guys like, hey, let's think long term here instead of short term.
Certainly a lot to look at as far as this house settlement that the NCAA has passed. When we come back, I will ask Parker Kelly a Titans question. He has been out there at OTAs over at Ascension St. Thomas Sports Park. I have some questions for him regarding Cam Ward and the Titans. That's next. Forest Company 102.5, 106.3, The Game.
Titans, what is your grade?
I'm going to give him an A because I'm more interested in watching the Titans than I've ever been in my entire life after the offseason, just because I think you're adding a quarterback who is very exciting to watch. For me, one of my favorite quarterback prospects I've watched over the last couple of years. Not saying he's one of the best, just one of the more fun ones. And I also like they took, it wasn't just like on the offense and defense, they remade their special teams, which was an issue at times last year, or it was a big issue, actually, if you look at the numbers. I think that might make a difference where we're not necessarily giving them credit during the offseason, but when you look back on the special teams, you make a huge gain there. I think that will make a big deal in the standings, make a big difference in the standings. And defensively, like, I like the pieces. I'm interested to see where they go the second year in this system. This Mike McDonald system was the one former Mike McDonald assistant who didn't get into the top 10 or get near a top 10 defense. But I think that Denard Wilson is going to have a way better year in season two. I don't see them being competitive yet, but I think they could win like 5 games, which is a big upgrade from where they were. And I think you're going to be optimistic about the quarterback situation going forward, whether Brian Callahan is the guy that's going to lead Cam Ward over the next 10 years or so in his career.
There you go. That was Steven Ruiz of the Ringer NFL podcast giving the Titans some high praise, even though they're still projected to kind of stink. Forest Company 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Connor Newt, Parker Kelly with you this morning. And Parker, you have been out there at Titans OTAs. You have seen firsthand what things look like as far as the Cam Ward front, how things are working. In your professional opinion, we'll say, what position group not named offensive line has looked the best, or not looked the best, needs to improve for Cam Ward to be a good quarterback this year?
And the wide receivers, tight ends, and offensive line, I think I can make an argument for all three. But you took away my answer because I was going to say the offensive line, so I will quickly pivot and I will go with the wide receiver room, because of outside of Calvin Ridley, who was a 1,000-yard receiver last year, who's your number two? Is it Tyler Lockett? Is it one of these rookies? Is it Alec Ayomaner? Is it going to be Chimera Dike? Because Nick Westbrook-Ikhine was the number two wide receiver for the Titans last year. He is now in South Beach in Miami, so he is no longer a part of the Titans. And if you go back, and I did this for fun the other day, I just went back and I was going through some stats from last year. And outside of Calvin Ridley, And outside of Nick Westbrook-Ikhine, the receiving stats were horrible, were absolutely terrible. So if this offensive line is able to gel, which a lot of people think it will, I think the next strongest or the next question mark, I'll say, that really needs to prove itself is the wide receiver room. Because, again, outside of Calvin Ridley, nobody really knows who wide receiver two will be at this point in time.
See, I agree with you. I think wide receiver is the key. But I also think that tight end, especially for a rookie quarterback, is what needs to gel the most. I think Gunnar Helm is mainly who I want to see the most out of because, as Joe Dubin says a lot, a tight end is a rookie quarterback's best friend. I think that if you have a solid tight end room, whether that be with Gunnar Helm or Chigakonkwo or whoever else you want to throw in there, I think you provide that safety blanket for Cam Ward as far as, you know, he's in a third down situation. His first and second reads aren't open. There's a safety blanket across the middle named Gunnar Helm. Throw it for a 5-yard check down. There you go, first down. I think that's what you need the most for Cam Ward is a safety blanket. And I think the tight end room is willing to provide that. That's why I think they need to improve the most, because if you have a better safety blanket, chances are you have a more confident and better quarterback.
I told you I can make an argument for all three. I certainly agree. Because, I mean, if you think about it, like, Travis Kelce has been Patrick Mahomes' best friend for however many years, and think about how many straight, you know, AFC championships they've won slash made. I think about a Jim Harbaugh offense and what he's going to do in Los Angeles. And even going back to his Michigan days, I mean, he has always had a good tight end to support the quarterback. Going back even to San Francisco, Vernon Davis, you know, he was a consistent safety blanket for the quarterbacks. I can make an argument for it. Chigakonkwo certainly had some big plays last year, but I would say that he hasn't quite lived up to expectations of what Titans fans were hoping mm-mm. he could turn into. Josh Wiley certainly has a lot of physical tools as well. I mean, you go out there and, I mean, he's 6'7". He's a really big guy. Almost plays the tight end position like a power forward. Like, and you can really, really tell. But his problem has been availability. I am very excited to see Gunnar Helm. I was in one of the little huddles with Titans tight end coach Luke Stalker, and he talked about, you know, turning these tight ends into three down players instead of, you know, just having them out there as an extra body to catch footballs and be a possession type receiver. You know, he wants them to be able to block and wants them to be do everything that a tight end needs to do.
Yeah.
So I'm certainly excited to see Gunnar Helm. I certainly think out of all the tight ends in the room, I certainly think that he might have the highest potential.
That's the thing about Gunnar Helm, I think, is that Chigakonkwo, his biggest X factor, I guess you could say, is his speed. Josh Wiley is his size and strength. Gunnar Helm, I don't think he excels at either of those, but I think he kind of possesses the best of both worlds where he's just a tight end. He is, if I were to build a tight end, not that I'm giving him this high of a praise, it would look similar to what Gunnar Helm is capable of, because he's able to get out in coverage and make a catch. He's able to make a good block. He's able to do all the things a good tight end should be. And I think that's what makes his potential so high for me, is that I think he is capable of providing Cam Ward with that safety blanket I'm talking about. And I don't know if the other two are. Josh Wiley is more of a goal line tight end that, you know, if he breaks off on a play action pass to the right, he's probably there open in the end zone. Chigakonkwo is more of a, you know, bubble screen tight end that you can throw off to the right and maybe he'll get 7 to 8 yards on a bubble screen. Gunnar Helm, I think, is he can do both of those things plus block. I think that's why I'm so encouraged, because I think he's, like you said, I think he has the most potential of the three.
Yeah, and just watching Gunnar Helm at Texas, I mean, if you watched any bit of Texas last year, Gunnar Helm really stood out. And now he doesn't have the speed that Chigakonkwo might have. And I will come to his defense a little bit. He ran the 4.8 at the NFL Combine, but he also ran it on a really, really bad sprained ankle. And he posted a picture, I think, afterwards, and you got to see it. It looked like a softball,
It
was growing out of his ankle. So, like, he does have a little bit more giddy up and wiggle than you might think, but he's not the most athletic person ever. And he's also not as big as Josh Wiley. But he seems to just do a little bit of everything really well. And I wouldn't say that he's elite. I mean, that would be – I can't say that for a rookie. But he does everything really well. And just watching him at practice, he looks really smooth coming out of breaks, looks really smooth catching the football. So I think that he could be a guy that can really grow with Cam Ward together since they came in at the same time.
Yeah. Well, let me ask you this, since you're out there. I know it's OTAs and pads aren't on and what say you, but how comfortable does Cam Ward look out there? Basically, from what I'm seeing from social media and from other Titans writers that I've talked to, like TD, he looks like a quiet confidence, which is what I expected when he was drafted. How comfortable does he look with his connections with Calvin Ridley and his other receivers?
Well, he's certainly been able to develop a chemistry. You can already tell the chemistry is blooming between him and Calvin Ridley because they connect a lot in practice. I've even seen it with Io Manor and with DK even. The thing about Cam Ward is you're not going to rattle him. He has a resting heart rate of 30, and going back to when he first got to Miami. And think about how full throat that crowd was in Gainesville when Miami was playing at Florida. Cam Ward never got too high, never got too low. I mean, he was just like this the entire time. And you're not going to be able to rattle him. And you can definitely see the quiet confidence that just talking to him at practice, the dude does not get rattled. And one of the things that really impressed me, they were doing a 7-on-7 drill, and he had a miscommunication with Bryce Oliver. Bryce Oliver was running a curl. I think Cam Ward expected him to go outside, so he threw the ball outside, but Bryce Oliver broke inside. And, that Cam Ward took the blame for it. But then he came back out, and he was connecting left and right. So, like, he has that ability to, okay, he may not start out well, but he gets it going. And he's a pro at overcoming adversity. I mean, his journey to becoming the number one overall pick, everybody knows about it.
Yeah.
So – I've been thoroughly impressed.
Yeah, certainly a lot to look forward to this offseason for the Titans. We'll step aside, come back real quick, do weekend picks, and then we'll get out of here. Forrest Company, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. One final segment here on Forrest Company, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Connor Newt, Parker Kelly, Jake Wallman with you. Let's do very quickly weekend picks, as we don't have a lot of time here. We'll start, as I am surrounded by two of them, Vols and Piggies, Super Regional, Tennessee and Arkansas. Parker Kelly, do your Vols get it done?
On Memorial Day, I thought the Vols would get it done in the Regional. I struggle to trust Arkansas in Super Regional play, so I am taking the Vols, and I think they punched their ticket to Omaha.
You got them going to Omaha. Jake Wallman, do you follow suit?
So I think Tennessee is the one that's playing with house money right now. Mm. They have nothing to lose. Arkansas, if they can't get back to Omaha, I think the pressure increases on Dave Van Horn and with that fan base. Plus, Tennessee usually performs in game ones, even though it's on a Saturday. Give me the Vols.
Someone's got to bring you both down to earth and keep this program from falling off the wayside of the Orange Sea. I'll go Razorbacks, as much as I don't like them either. I think they're due to break free from the curse of not making it to an Omaha, the Omahogs, as they call themselves. Tennessee doesn't play necessarily well on the road. I think they're going to do the thing where they have done all season. They win the first game and then drop the next two. Omaha advances to Omaha. Parker, since I know you're such a massive hockey guy,
massive.
Game three of the Stanley Cup Finals headed back to Sunrise, Miami, Florida. Panthers and Oilers, the series tied at 1-1 after two back-to-back overtime games. Where are we going in game three?
I'm going to break down the X's and O's for you, right? No, I'm just playing. Okay, no.
Beyond the point, baby.
Hey, Hey, what about, you know, we've gotten two overtime games in the Stanley Cup Finals, so I think that that's been awesome, an awesome watch. So I do like the Florida Panthers getting it done in Game 3. I think they'll take advantage of the home environment. And, I mean, they've been on a tear making, what, the last three Stanley Cup Finals? Is that right?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah, so give me the Florida Panthers.
Jake Wauman, the series is even.
I'm going to go with the Oilers.
Okay. The Oilers and the Panthers, I'm deciding what I want to do here. I'm with Parker. I think the Panthers take advantage of home ice. I almost said home field. It is not a field. It is ice. I think they take advantage of home ice. I think Matthew Tkachuk has a good game. And I think Bob only allows one goal, and the Panthers run away with it. Wild card. Parker Kelly, you can pick anything you want. Where are we going?
All right. So let's, since we're in the middle of super regionals right now, UCLA and UTSA, I have a sneaky feeling that after the way UTSA performed in the Austin regional, I don't know why, but I really like them. And I think that they are going to upset UCLA. So give me the Roadrunners, baby.
Parker Kelly going with UTSA. Jake Wauman, your wild card pick.
So I caught some of Auburn and Coastal Carolina last night down on the Plains in game one of that super regional. Coastal ended two threats in the ninth and tenth inning by doubling Auburn off in a double play. Give me Coastal Carolina to take game two and make it back to Omaha.
Jake Wauman going with the Chanticleers and free concessions. I can't turn down free food either. I'm going to go with a bit of an unusual one. Today is WWE Money in the Bank. My boy, the megastar LA Knight, is in the Money in the Bank ladder match. Give me him to take it home with everybody saying LA Knight. Yeah, that'll do it for us here on Forrest Company. My thanks to Nick Frazier, Parker Kelly for joining us, Jake Wauman behind the glass. For all those three and the Game Nashville Sports Network, this is Connor Newt saying thank you, and we'll see you next week for a special debut of a 3-hour Forrest Company.